Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with a one-of-a-kind singleton musician. Zoe Lewis is like nobody else. She says, and I know that it is true, that she believes that she was drawn to music as she popped out of the womb. She says, and you'll hear her say it over and over again, that she could do nothing else, that this was always what she was meant to do, which is to say, to make a life of music, to play every instrument she could get her hands on, to be on stage and make a community of an audience, to entertain and to enlighten. This is a really unusual woman, and her story and her life and her music are all interesting, fascinating, worth listening to. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Not, as I generally say, the person you think you're supposed to be, or the person other people told you you were supposed to be, or needed to be, or had to be. Not the person other people are. Not even the person that you think if you were it, other people would like you or love you or want you or hire you or pay you or whatever it is. No, none of these people, but the person that you really are. I say in every show that unfortunately, many too many of us come out of childhood believing that something or some things about us are unattractive, ugly, not good in one way or another. And we learn to pretend that these things are not true of us. And we get so good at pretending that we come into adulthood forgetting that we are these things, forgetting things about us which are really essential to us. And so many of us are out here in the world being people we aren't really, and not being the whole person that we are. In my show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Because in order to make a life of music in our culture, it has to be who you really are. You hear people saying over and over again, "I didn't have a choice. This is what I had to do. This is who I am." And this is so very, very true of Zoe Lewis. You will hear her. You don't even need to hear her say it. It's in everything that she says. And as I said, her life, her ideas, her way of being is really interesting. And so now, without further ado, here is Zoe Lewis. So I'm here with Zoe Lewis, who is very difficult to describe. She's a remarkable performer, a natural on stage. She plays, at least the instruments I have seen, she played piano, guitar, ukulele, spoons, wash tub. Did I miss something? Go, harmonica, right, harmonica. Sings and writes the most interesting, clever, insightful, and often very funny songs. So I saw Zoe last night at Fogartyville, and am lucky enough to be able to interview her today because she's not leaving till tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I explained to Zoe that I interview people who make their living with or their life with an art, which she clearly does. And I only ask one question, and it is, do you remember, can you tell me, the very first time that music called you, seemed important to you, you were drawn to it?
Well, I always say it's when I popped out of the womb.
I believe you. Do you have any evidence for that?
You know, my mum had me when she was 51, and I have plenty of songs about her. She was a big inspiration. And my dad, too, and they were older parents. And my dad could play by ear, and my mum was tone deaf.
Amazing.
And, you know, my story is that I was an accident. They thought I was a tumor. And when they found out it was a baby, and my mum was like, "Oh, my gosh, I'm going to have a baby at 51. Well, she prayed that at least if she's going to have a baby, she better sing. So, because she always wished she could sing, and she sang, well, that's a whole nother story, but she didn't sing, you know. I heard her sing and she was fine, but she'd been told growing up that she had no ear. I think her mother had an ear, was
a jealous
piano. Well, no, was a very good piano player.
Right.
I think my grandma, who
yes.
I never met. So she, my mum always says she sat down to have a piano lesson and my grandma said, "Forget it, darling, you know, you have other talents." So she wanted that for me. So maybe it's because she always told me that's what she really wanted, but I certainly have always loved music. And I do have an ear. I must have got it from my dad. I don't know. I mean,
well,
so
it's even possible your mother had it. We don't know.
Well, you're right. You know, it's that whole thing about encouraging kids.
That's right.
And I was encouraged and to follow, to do, I think, because I had older parents. They were just like, "Let her do what she has to do." I wasn't pushed into places.
Well, so did you take lessons?
I did, but I was playing. My dad had an electric organ, so I was playing that forever. I was playing music on whatever I could get my hands on.
How young?
Four or something. Mm-hmm. And I must have started piano lessons quite early. But I never had a piano in the house until I was 13.
So what did you practice on?
Well, I didn't really. I mean, I'd get this little organ. It had chords in the left hand. And then I played Blue Spanish Eyes and or anything that my dad would play. And it wasn't even a big, fancy organ. It was tiny. But I remember going on holiday to Cornwall, too, and taking a piano keyboard drawn on a piece of cardboard and playing that.
Wow.
You know, and then we did recorder in England. We did recorder. I mean, I don't know. I've travelled the world a lot, and I love it. I'm always inspired in third world countries because they make music out of anything.
Out of anything.
You know, out of an old garbage can, an oil drum, gourds that fall from the tree. You know, pan pipes are just made from reeds, and you know, that I actually did a workshop with kids to encourage that music in our pockets. Just empty your pockets. What have you got?
Let's make some music. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got a whole CD of Christmas tunes played on rubber bands. You know, you can make, if you have the music. I was in Africa. People lent me guitars that they couldn't buy strings, so they just kept tying the strings. Every time a string broke, they'd knot it. So that would affect your playing,
of course, because
you'd have to put your finger over. But it affected the whole style of music.
It just changed it, right.
So it was great. And I suppose, you know, if you feel the need to play, you'll find something to play.
Okay, but what I want to know is how you found it. So at four, you're already playing.
Well, that's the thing. I try and I think that I just didn't find it. I just had it.
No, I believe that
I have no. And people say, when did you decide to make music your life or your life? I mean, I can't do anything else. I have to.
I know. I understand that.
I'll go crazy if I
know what I mean. I understand that, but you must have had
that inspiration. I don't know. I can't pinpoint the actual.
No. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I got the point. I got it. What I'm curious about is. So, having recognized that you were drawn to this thing, you took some lessons. Did you play in school? Did you play in bands? Did you study anything, anywhere?
Yes, I studied classical piano.
When you were a child?
When I was little, we have the grades in England. I did all 8 grades, and I'd go and I had she must have been 92, my piano teacher, and it would take her a long time to get down the stairs, and I'd knock on the door, and we could hear her coming. And eventually you'd get in, and she couldn't play herself because she was so arthritic, but she'd tell me what to, you know, give me instruction, and I'd get rapped on the knuckles if I made a mistake.
Oh, my.
But, you know, I was naughty, and I'd wind her up. And the thing is, I need to hear it because I'm a bit impatient, I suppose, as a kid. And I was like, I just can't read the dots very well. I'm terrible. I mean, I managed to get through my exams, but I'm not a sight reader.
Just learn it.
I'm always like, will you play it?
Yes.
And then I'm all right. So she couldn't. She was arthritic, so I'd really, every time she played it, then I'd get it. But if she couldn't. So then she eventually gave up teaching because she was, you know, getting on. And then I had this young guy who was just great. He was the teacher at school for the orchestra and everything. I played clarinet too. And he was great, and it was a whole different style of teaching.
So you played clarinet in the band?
I played clarinet, and we call it the school orchestra there. And, yeah, mm-hmm. I squeaked around. But really, it was mostly, I mean, I always played, but it was when I got my piano.
When you were 13?
13, and it was put in my bedroom. We didn't have any room, and it was in my bedroom. Well, that's it. Can you imagine a teenager with a piano in her bedroom?
Yes, I can.
I mean, I just shut the door, and I was in there all the time playing. I'd come back home from school.
And what were you playing?
Well, I had to practice my classical, but I did that so little. And I was just, I scraped by the skin of my teeth, because I was trying to find out what jazz was. And, you know, come from a little village, no one knew.
Wow.
It's, you know, I mean, and I would buy pop records. I would go to the music library in our town. I'd take the bus to the town and get all the records and gradually start hearing stuff. Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday were my big loves when I eventually discovered jazz, and I would try and copy them. We did, though, have one record. I don't know how it got to our house. We had all funny Reader's Digest records, and my mum and dad had old records like Ivan Novello, "We Will Gather Lilacs in the Spring Again," and I love all those old tunes. But we had a Django Reinhardt.
Oh my God.
And he's still, to this day, is one of my most favorites.
Yeah.
But I can't believe, how did Django Reinhardt get in my house in Rottingdean, a little village in the south of England? I don't know. Who put it there? I can't imagine that my dad had it, that my brother and sister had that.
So you listened and
I listened and I copied. And so Ella Fitzgerald, you know, I'd just stop the record, you know, and try and get the chord on the piano and then put the needle down again and try for the next chord and then copy down all the lyrics, you know, no computers. And then I had the lyric and then I'd be singing the song.
Right.
And then I did that again and again and again. And I'd try and play with the records or then I'd just go off and jam.
Oh, sorry, sneezing. Thank you. And then, oh, okay, you'd go off and jam, is that what you said?
Well, I'd jam with myself. I'd sort of
freeform. Oh,
you'd go
off and jam. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. I so you'd improvise on what... on what you had written down, right?
Yeah, I just like make a lot of noise in my bedroom, basically, and try things. I got all, and when I did start finding out what jazz was, I got, you know, brought all the avant-garde records back that I just didn't understand at all, and I thought, but I really tried to understand where those people were coming from, and then I tried to play, you know, like that, and anyway... then I eventually started meeting other musicians.
Well, that's an interesting leap. So this is high school, 13, 14, 15, 16, like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing in the school orchestra, but you're playing clarinet. And at home, you're woodshedding, you're learning, right? So when did you start to meet other musicians, and did you go on to college?
No, I really... got so much off records. You know, I have a brother and sister, but they left before I even turned up, so it's like as an only child. I had lots of friends. They'd all climb in and out of my window, and I'd play piano, and we'd write silly songs. And I was always entertaining in the village. I was always writing silly songs in our village shows, or...
Oh, what kind of shows?
We have pantomimes in England, which are, you know, at Christmas time or holidays, it's a formula. I would be, I remember I was a munchkin in The Wizard of Oz. That was my very first moment of fame. And then they had the Rottingdean Girls Club, and we would do funny shows. And that was for acting, but I would always write songs for the intermission, you know.
Oh, funny.
And sit there and play the piano. And then there was a talent show, I remember, in Brighton, which is the big town next to us. And me and my friend Richard, he was a guitarist, we started to jam, you know, and it was very exciting to me to have the two sounds together. And we actually won a radio.
You won a radio? in a competition.
We were like, wow.
So who got the
this
radio?
Is great. I think he went off with it. I was happy with the accolade, you know.
But that's actually another point. The connection to music is one thing, but on stage, you're very much attuned to the audience, very connected to the audience, very interested in the impact that you're having on the audience. So that's different from just the music. Do you remember that you just said, and that's what made me think of it, that the accolade was enough? Do you remember that when you noticed that you liked being applauded or being, well, that's not even it, but having an impact?
I really like to make a connection. It's very, very important to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically my life's work, I think. I mean, I'm a traveler, and I love that, traveling with people. I love people, and I love stories. I don't think I consciously thought anything about the accolade. I mean, of course I like people to clap when you've done something. I mean, I think I would get praised a lot as a kid because I was the last one along, you know. I was lucky. I had loving parents and you know, anything I did, my mum was like, marvelous, darling, you know. I realized that not everyone got that.
Yeah, I'd like to stop here, and I always like to stop here and say it's impossible to overestimate the importance of parental support. And if you get marvelous, darling, that's the best.
I could just like brush my teeth and I've done extremely well. And the thing is, so to me, it's so important to praise children.
Yeah, that's right.
Always. And so that's another, it's really important. I realize I'm really lucky. And you tell everyone how great they're doing.
Yes.
You just got to praise everyone because it opens a door. And it, you know, you feel like you can do anything. My mom always says, you can do it. If someone else can do it, you can do it.
Yes, and of course the flip side is if you don't get that, then you feel like you can't do anything.
Well, exactly, and you know, I have, you know.
Okay, so you were extremely fortunate, and you started getting accolades really young. It's not your family. If your family gives it to you, then you come to more or less expect it. You're not afraid to put it out there.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I have to say, you know, everyone thought music was a ridiculous way to make a living, and, you know, I mean, no one thought that I would ever. So that's, if you want to know my story, I didn't ever go to college. I was, you know, I wanted to do music. When I was 11, I went on a cruise to the Caribbean. My sister, when she was 17, moved to the Caribbean. And my dad retired when we were 11, so we actually, he saved up all his retirement money and we went.
To visit,
you know,
your sister.
Imagine little Zoe from cold, chilly England going to the land of palm trees.
I see.
Coconuts.
No wonder you're a traveler. You learned early.
Going underneath the sea and seeing fishes. I mean, I was like, I'm out of here. I know that the world I can see, mm-hmm. you know. So, what was my point? Oh, so music, you know. That's it. Mm-hmm. I wanted, after this cruise, I wanted to become an entertainment officer on board a Caribbean cruiser. That's when I was 11. And I would go to careers interviews when I was older, and they'd say, what do you want to do? I want to do. And people thought I was mad. And I just wanted to play music and see the world. Well, as it happens, I have.
Yes, it does.
But that you say that in a careers interview and they think you're off your head.
No, that's
so,
right.
Well, and you want to do music, so they're like, no, sorry, you're never going to make a living. So I got directed in, I was heading to tourism college. So anyway, that same summer, before I went to university to study tourism, because I'd agreed, yeah. And I didn't want to do classical music. It was too fuddy-duddy for me. It wasn't my scene.
No.
And so I, you know, I just went to buy a hi-fi from the newspaper, you know, a stereo system that were used one that was...
And someone was selling.
Yeah, and I turned up to the someone who, they were a band and they were looking for a keyboard player.
And I
was like, oh, well, I could play keyboards. And they were all like these punky guys. And they were like, you want to play in our band? And I was over the moon. And I said, yes. And I went home and I told my parents, I'm not going to university. I'm going to play in this band. And my dad was like, well, you can't stop her. So
no, we've been saying yes so long, we can't really say no now.
Well, they let me, you know, I really respected them very much, and they respected me. And
how old were you? 18?
I was 18.
Yeah.
18, 19. And so I joined the band. And voila, terrible band.
Really? What kind of band was it?
It was actually a punk band, but they were like drug and all into drugs. And I was just merrily playing music.
Yes, right,
you know,
right,
I hadn't even had a cigarette or anything. I was just like having the time of my life playing music. And then I joined a couple more in my town, and then I looked in the newspaper and went up to London, found Latin jazz pop band. And that was in England, that was the days when they had Sade. Joe Jackson had done a, because he's a piano player, I really liked his, you know, he did Latin. There was much more Latin tinge going on in pop music then. Mm-hmm. And my English ears were like thoroughly confused, but loving it, you know, with the, how do you play that groove?
Yeah, well, you figured it out, because it's
well,
in everything
I love
you
the
do
Latin.
I know, right, yeah.
So, so I grew up there. They, and those kids in the band were all going to, they were studying in a school of performing arts, which is really where I should have been sent.
That's right.
But, you know, but then I learned off them. So they all told me everything they're learning in school. Meanwhile, I studied mime, pantomime, all these adult evening classes. I kind of just had my own funny education.
So you're in London and you're with this, you've connected with this Latin jazz band. And are you playing with them? Or you're just hanging with them?
No, I'm playing and writing a lot. They're the writers.
When did you start writing? Oh, you started writing the
pantomimes. Well, I was writing before, but then it was like a 8 or 10 piece band. I mean, and we were all, you know, we were young. We were going to make it.
Yes.
Really going to make it. And we were really rehearsing. I mean, we were rehearsing many times a week. We were tight. We had, you know, backing singers.
And we
had, you know, I was there doing the little riffs on the keyboard, and it was great. We had congas, we had timbales, but it was real pop. Some great pop songs they wrote, and we got, you know, we recorded a 12-inch single, and we had interest from a record company, but nothing ever happened to it. I think the band disbanded or something. Or before, oh no, it was me. But it was going too long. And I wanted to come to the States. I wanted to travel and find out more music. And I think I wanted to write my own stuff. Yes. I was being held back and I wanted to write my own stuff. A lot of the things that I've done, I do because I feel it in my gut, but I don't feel it in my, I don't, in my brain doesn't I'd tell
like,
me.
Yeah, I'd like actually to highlight that the ability to recognize what is right for you, and for many people, I think it's visceral, it's not intellectual, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really happy to hear you say it, that that you're consciously aware of the fact that when something is right for you, you feel the impetus to do it, you feel it in your body, right?
Yeah.
It's great. Okay, so you're in London having the time of your life, and then suddenly you understand that you need to move on, and the place you need to move on to is the States.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you, 20, 22?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Something like that.
Very brave.
22. Yeah, 22 I am.
Yeah, very brave. So where did you go?
So then I was going to the States, and I wasn't, wrote down on my visa form, because in those days, if you're British, you needed to get a visa. You don't need that anymore if you're British. I wrote down musician.
Oh, my God.
I'm 22. I'm a musician.
Yes.
I want to see the world.
I see. So
and what did they say?
What did they say?
No.
Oh, God, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we don't want any more?
Musicians, well, I've since learned you keep quiet about being a musician.
Oh, I think.
For certain. Oh, yes. Oh. You don't, of course you don't want a musician. Look, yeah, musicians mean...
Yes, I know. More poverty and
you dope. You try right? Going through immigration carrying a guitar and see what happens.
Oh, my God, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, it's fine. But, I mean, you know, no, it's just... You know, you have to look a certain way, and you have to be a business studies student, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, right, yes. You'd so, have been fine if you said
but
you
they
were
said
in hospitality.
No. It's all right. Eventually they said yes.
Did you
when
keep
I
saying
said I was a business studies student. And but at that point I was like, well, up your... I mean,
yeah,
I can't
really.
Say,
you
like,
can,
this
say,
is where
you can say anything
I'll say,
this.
See you later, then I'm going to go and travel on my own across the whole of South America. I mean, I was very upset because this is... You're playing with someone's dreams. And everyone said yes to this point, so they're saying
yes.
No, you know. So
must have been
well,
a shock.
They're not. I mean, I wasn't born with a silver spoon. I mean, but
no,
I
no,
was
no.
supported, and I, you know, I was also, you know, my mom, because my mom and dad are so, you know, well, they were elderly. We had very little. I was brought up simply,
But you were given the things that matter most.
Yeah, and they taught me to live frugally.
Mm-hmm.
War mentality. You have depression mentality here. We have war mentality in England.
Right.
And I always say to anyone who wants to be a musician, you need that because I can live on very little. Mm-hmm. You use your you work it out, don't you?
Yes, you do.
And
okay, so how long did it take? Well, did you go to South America?
So, yeah, so then I was like, so that's where I learned so much more about the world and
Latin.
And telling what you tell people and how to get by.
Really?
And, yeah, you know, like, I traveled, imagine me, 23, traveling all across Peru, Venezuela, with not very much money in my pocket,
and
meeting
by
friends, going off with people, trusting everyone.
Yes.
Not a thing happened. You know, ended up having the wildest place, living with families. People opened their doors and were so kind. They saw me coming like some young thing. I mean, I would do it if I saw me coming along. Or there are young kids all over the place. Open your doors and help them, you know. They're following their dreams, and I was doing that. And I that's why I do still, whatever's going on, have so much faith in humankind. And I have hope because people were always so kind to me. And then I moved on to the next place. So anyways, I was like a sponge seeping up all those grooves. And I was like hearing music. I was buying little cassettes, and anywhere I heard the music, I just wandered.
Did you bring an instrument with you?
No, I didn't even. I just played piano at that point.
Wherever you went, if there was a piano, you played it.
Yeah, but there's never a piano.
There's never
so
a piano.
So I just soaked it in with my ears, really. Right, I wasn't physically playing.
Right, or even really trying.
I was just loving. I was learning. It was the university of life for me. Yeah. I was learning. And then I eventually ended up in San Francisco. And then
Does that mean that you figured out how to write business studies on the
yes.
visa, right?
Yes.
Okay. How old were you when you wound up in
23 on my 23rd birthday. I bought one-way tickets the whole way.
Oh, my God.
And I had my visa in my pocket.
And you got off the plane.
And you know the reason? Well, there's many. But I really wanted to come to the States. Do you know Michelle Schacht?
Yes.
She's a musician. She lived in Amsterdam. She's from Texas. And she just accompanied herself on the guitar. And I got hold of this record. It's called The Campfire Tapes. And it was recorded at the Kerrville Folk Festival in Texas around a campfire. And the crickets are singing. And she's sitting there, you know, with a bandana, which is a very American thing, you know, around her neck, playing the guitar and singing songs with stories. You know, I really loved her story songs. Great writer. And I wanted to be like her, you know. So I bought myself a bandana in the airport when I arrived, and I tied it around my neck, and I went and found my friends.
And because you had friends in San Francisco?
I had friends in San Francisco, yes, that I'd met in London.
Okay, so you had some place to go.
Yes.
You had, right.
Okay. I had an address. I had many addresses in my pocket. I had addresses in Peru and Venezuela. Friends of friends.
Friends, yeah.
And that's the thing. You've got to have friends of friends and friends.
If someone
knows someone who knows someone, then they're all right. And
that's
you
right.
go and you
okay.
turn up.
Okay, so you land in San Francisco, a very young, very enthusiastic, dedicated, hungry, right? And what happens?
Well, many things happen. and the friends that I turned up to visit were lesbians in San Francisco, and I quickly came out. I think if you want to talk about going by your gut.
Yes.
That was another reason I was drawn there.
Yes.
I felt like I needed to come to San Francisco. And that was it. I didn't have any problem at all. I think I was free.
Yeah.
When I left England, I was free to be who I wanted to be. I could be anyone I wanted to be. So as soon as I put my bandana on...
You were yourself.
So they were hilarious. I mean, they've gone and one has won the Whitney Prize, and one is director, and you know everyone's gone on to do great things, and but we were little whippersnappers then.
Yes.
And then they were in a band. I met their friends, and then Jimmy hit one of their friends. We jumped freight trains all up and down the West Coast, and I don't know. And then I kept hearing music. I kept, you know, there I really heard more the. I kind of traveled across the state, the states, like, it was the Bob Dylan, you know, all the Bob Dylan tunes, all the songs that I'd grown up with, I suddenly was in that town, you know, or
yes.
sitting at the dock of the bay, or, I mean, it was
yes.
so romantic and amazing. And then I, well, we had, so then, to cut a long story short, we drove across the United States of America. I was borrowing people's guitars at that point. And I was playing, that's it, in San Francisco at an open mic in a place called the Albion Tavern in the Mission District.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about supportive and talk about different kinds of musicians. And I heard great stuff there. And so every Monday I'd go, and that was really good for me.
You play?
I would play. I'd borrow people's guitar. I'd write, terrible songs. I'd write about the eggs I ate in the morning, or everything was new.
Yeah.
You know, I could write a song about anything because I just was amazed by everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, in San Francisco, the mariachis are walking around, and, you know, there's people, poor people on the street lying in the corner. There's rich people going by in Rolls Royces. I think I picked up a gardening job and we'd end up in very posh houses. And, you know, I was, you know, saw all different sides of that town. And then eventually got an old VW bus with my friends, and we had to drive at night because it would overheat. And we would even switch off the engine and career down the hills to, like, let it, you know, cool down, and then switch on at the top, you know, the bottom. And then we went to Maine, I think, to pick apples. I mean, I've been to every state, to all 50 states now.
And you've done everything.
Well, you've done more than most people do, but there's many more to do.
Oh, yes.
But I've seen the States. I feel like I know this country a bit. I mean, I love it. I've seen a lot of it. We ended up in Northampton, Massachusetts. I don't know if you know it. It's for all the colleges, lots of colleges there. And I think there were more, I fell into all these poets and more folk musicians there. And that's really, I think now, where I mean, my family always loved to tell a story, but the folk, I have the jazz groove and the Latin groove from my travels. I mean, I'm not really, my ear doesn't go to folk music.
No.
But I love the art of the story, and I love a story song, which is, you know, if you go to folk concerts, they're always telling stories, and all the songs are telling stories, and they're political, and they're great. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm a bit... And then I ended up in Provincetown, which is a gay little party town on the tip of Cape Cod, and hung out with tons of drag queens. So then I got cabaret and drag. I mean, without even knowing it, that's what I'm exposed to.
Right.
So I suppose that's what makes me...
And integrating.
Yeah, I mean, world beat groove and old 1920s swing is my love.
Uh-huh.
But I do love, if I go to a show, I want to be entertained, you know, and maybe that's because I've been hanging out for a long time in a party town, because if you just sing a song on a guitar, they're not going to listen, but if you juggle a plate at the same time...
Yeah. Oh, yes, I forgot that she juggles plates while she's singing. I forgot.
They might give you a moment.
Are you serious? That's attention. Hilarious. And is that where the spoons come from? Oh, my God.
The spoons probably come from me just, like, trying, you know.
Yes, I do. But this is such an interesting thing to me. Because I think you're right that we're pretty jaded. And so just the regular somebody doing something, you know, like playing guitar and singing a song, it's just not that dramatic, you know?
Well, it can be if it's a brilliant song. It's for all our different moods, you know? And you find out what you're best at, and I feel like I like to put on a show. I mean, I have gone to see famous artists and they just sing the songs, mm-hmm. and I want to know more about them.
Yeah.
I could just put the record on.
Yes.
Will you tell me the story behind the song, or give me a few little glimpses into you, you know, that not for me just to interpret the songs. Give me some clues. I mean, that's why I come to see you live. And I mean, as well as to experience the awesomeness of a live performance. But I mean, personally, I love that. I appreciate it. I think it's a gift from a performer to the audience too when they give that.
I agree.
And I like to try and give people their money's worth, you know. But then, of course, there's all different people out there. So,
well,
I'm gonna try and touch them all in a different way, and it's very difficult.
but you do a really good job at it. It's quite clear that you're not up there isolated from us. You know, that you're interested in and attempting to make community. No?
You're very insightful.
Well, it's not. I mean, really, it's...
Well, no, but it's, you put it very well, and I do... It's nice what you say, because that's important to me, community. I mean, I grew up in a little village, and then... And community is important. And Provincetown, where I am now, on the tip of Cape Cod, is real. Community is so important, and it's a microcosm of the world. If you can make things work in your own community, then there's hope for the world. You know, it's just a tiny part of the world. People act the same in their communities.
And I think that's true. I'm a little less hopeful
I
than
know.
You.
Well,
I'm sorry.
You know, I keep having to hammer it over my head.
Yes, I know. I thought about it when you were talking, and you know, even in the show, I was thinking, well, I hope you're right.
Well, I got to work out a new. I'm working on it. There's a new angle of approach.
Ah, yes.
Well, no, I mean, from all the events that have occurred lately.
Yes.
I mean, it's important to. I want to give people hope, but we've got to fight. Everyone's looking for an answer at the moment. And, of course, we don't have it. But we need to keep our strength to continue and our humor. And then we will be strong and we will be able to achieve something. I mean, we have to. We're still here. We're alive. You know. We've got to... I want to build bridges and not walls. You know, so it's...
Well, and you do. When you in your work, you do, right? So good. Okay, good. So you're in Provincetown. We've gotten you there, right? And when did you get there?
So I went to, to Provincetown. Someone just said you should check out this little town in Cape Cod. I have to live by the sea. I have to be on the edge, and I love water. And I've been every day. I kept been jumping in the water since I've been in Florida, so I'm happy by the water. And as soon as I was there, I loved it. And I went for a gig, and it went very well. And then they offered me the whole season. So we live by the seasons there.
Yeah.
So it's full on crazy, you know, party town. And I've got plenty of work. And then everyone leaves.
Okay, so then everybody leaves, and then so do you because you travel,
yeah.
Right?
And then my little place that I lived in, which was just great, I managed to find, you know, it's been the same rent forever, thanks to my landlady, who's just lovely, because it's got very expensive there, mm-hmm. And she just died last year. But she was really, because of that, you know, the water would get switched off. I would only have it for the summer, but she's my benefactor. I always say she's one of the reasons why I could do music, because I had an abode, I could... shut the door, leave my stuff, and know that I had a place to come back to. And that is, you know, it's magic.
What occurs to me is that having started life with so much acceptance and encouragement and appreciation of you and freedom, one who starts life like that tends to expect it and find it. And it sounds like that's what happened to you, is that you went from one situation to another, but they were always the same thing, supportive, encouraging, you know.
Well, you look for that, or you need it, and it's that gut thing again.
You're
yes. drawn to people who
yes.
who you click with. I mean, we had a great relationship right up to the very end, and I gave to her, and she gave to me.
Yes, yes.
And we... I often think, there's a few people who really helped me along the way, just by being, you know, supportive. You know, I was in another country, you know,
yes.
far from home. It's not
with
like
nothing.
I ever sent for money back.
Right,
home
exactly. Right, you had nothing. You came with
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and it was great. And yeah, so I would go off. Once you've got the travel bug, you've been bitten, you know. So I wanted to see the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great for me because I could make my money in the summer and then go.
Uh-huh.
So I'd go, well, I've been, you know, to 70 countries now.
Have you
counting.
Worked in any of them? Or it's just
well,
all...
no. I just save all. We stash our money.
Oh, my
you know,
God.
I was doing 13 shows a week that first summer. You know, because I can play jazz in the piano bars.
Right.
And then I'd go and do another show after I did a double act funny show.
Wow.
And then Sundays I would do lunch Sunday brunch and play in a restaurant in the evening. I mean, I'm in my 20s. I wouldn't do
that. I was just going to say.
Now.
I was just going to
say. And then I'd end up with, like,
a lot of money.
Not really, but for me,
then,
oh my gosh. And because I knew how to live off hardly anything, I would stash it away and have enough to get through the winter, especially if you go to a third world country and you're living on $5 a day or something. So I'd have the best time. So go all over the place. Been all over Asia and South and Central America.
Okay, so you're still in Provincetown. How long have you been there?
27 years.
27 years, I see. I see. So that's clearly home, right? Yeah.
Well, it's funny because England's home and Provincetown's home. I jump on a plane and I go home.
And then
I get on a plane and I come home. Well, I wrote a musical actually called Across the Pond.
Oh.
And it's about that. It's set on a plane and a baby's born on the plane.
Oh.
And so...
And
it's about the definition of home. And there were four characters. I played an old lady who was bringing her husband in an urn to the United States and coming to live with her daughter, and she wondered what home was. And then I had a businessman who slept in so many hotels all over the place, he didn't know what home was. Mm-hmm. A backpacker who was full of, he was Irish, he was full of the joys of travel, he didn't care what home was. Mm-hmm. And then an American traveler who only wanted to stay in American hotels around
because
the world.
That's what feels like home.
So, it was funny. But that was the point when I really felt like the States became my home. But I wanted to write that to sort of explain it.
Okay, so what you're doing now, I mean, this is the winter, and this is a gig at Fogartyville. This is not a travel, right? So are you, and you said you were working in St. Pete, right? So
yeah, I'm on tour, but I mean... Touring is my life. I mean, music and all of it is all part and parcel. I mean, I am geographically driven. So, of course, I'm going to come to Florida and do some nice gigs, and I'm building an audience here. And I just played St. Pete and Fort Myers, West Palm. I'm playing Miami, St. Augustine. And then I'm going to Mexico, where I have work, which is... remarkable. Last year I had work there too, so now I have a bunch of gigs in Mexico, which is a dream come true because I can go to my third world country and even make some money to buy tacos. it's all about, that's the thing, if you want to live off your art, you have to get creative in many different ways.
Yes.
I mean, you can either make tons of money or you can make it your lifestyle and enjoy every moment of it. I mean, I know for me, I like to do a chunk of gigs. Like, I've just done four, and then I've got a few days off. It's very important for me to have days off to just enjoy the area and not feel like I'm running around like a chicken with my hair cut off. To be. And then you see the place, too, and experience it and create relationships with people.
And more songs.
Yes, more songs. And you come back. It's like... when you're a traveler, you always come back. I would say bye-bye, but I'm saying hello all the time, too. I was like, you don't get rid of me that easily.
So is there anything that you want to do that you haven't done?
Many things. Oh. Well, I've written two musicals, and I always say, there's so much work. Actors are really different than musicians.
So you've had them produced?
I've had them produced in Provincetown.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Broadway director come up, and we directed them, and it was great. Very proud of them. Across the Pond and one called Snail Road. I would like to write another musical. I would like to maybe write a one-woman musical. So it pulls in theatre, because my show, the reason I wrote the musicals in the first place, because everyone's like, Zoe, you're quite theatrical up there, why didn't you do theatre? So then I went ahead and wrote the musical, and then I could take that musical on the road. Do you know how much that costs? So me being the queen of frugality, or working out how to make what you really want happen, you have to be careful what you wish for.
Oh my god.
So I think I would like to have a maybe make a one-woman musical that is set, you know, and I make things up on stage, you know, it's all there's nothing set. But with a, you know, when you do theatre, it's set. Yes. Then you have your format that you can go around.
Yes, within. But you've told them where the lights are, and you've got your blocking, and you so you really can't be.
But I think that if I wrote something like that that I was proud of, I'd like to take that on the road. And I've had offers in little theatres. Then you can play little theatres, and you could even do a run in the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be something that I'd like to do. And then I'd like to write all sorts of stories. I'd probably like to do a kids' album, too. I mean, you know, keep going.
Yes.
There's not enough time, but it's lovely to create. Anything. You know, writing and making things is so nice. And then you're on the road putting it out there, too. So, you know.
Okay, I have only one more question.
Yes.
And that is, having spent, actually you've talked about this, but you might have something else to say, a life dedicated to music, is there anything you would say about what that's like? What that means, what that feels like, what you think about it?
Well, I feel I'm very lucky because a lot of people are searching for their direction. And I realize that I had no choice. I knew my direction always without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I always say I couldn't help it. I got pulled there.
Mm-hmm.
So I really am grateful, and I really encourage people to follow their guts.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone has that twinge, and then so much in our culture stops us from going there, and so much from the way we're brought up, and that's why I'm really big, as I said before, on praising kids and letting them be open. That's why sometimes scary things don't happen. You know, of course you're often in danger, but if you feel any twinge of danger, you've got to you run the other way. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, be in tune with that. And I think that's so important. It's lovely to live off your art. It's also a skill not to make it become a job, too.
Yes. I think that's right.
And I think you have to keep recreating. And, you know, say when I was doing my lounge piano gig or my jazz piano gig,
mm-hmm.
where the whole of the room is eating or whatever and not to listening.
Yeah.
But you're creating a nice ambiance. You have to use it to... I often jam with other people and then we're connecting together.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't do the ones that really mean a lot for you. I don't do my own stuff.
Right.
Because it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
You know. So that would be my job often.
Yeah, that's right.
It would be my job. And then I'd go and do what yourself. I totally love. And now I don't do those gigs hardly at all unless I just feel like keeping my hand in to play some jazz.
Right.
You know, so it's great. But, you know. And if, yeah. It's not about the money.
Clearly not.
It's not about the money. It's about just it being part of your life. So sometimes I say, well, if you can't make the money off it, don't just keep playing and just do something else to make the money. So you have the joy. You've got to keep the joy in there. That's what I think.
I think that is a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much, Zoe.
Thank you. That was great.
It's lovely.
Thank you. You asked great questions.
So Zoe says, and I think she's exactly right, that she is one of the lucky ones, that so many people are looking for who they are, what they should be doing, what is right for them. And she has always known, you know, you heard her say, she popped out of the womb knowing. She has given her life to the creation of music and to the discovery of how other people live and how they make music. And again, how fortunate she is to have always known, to have never questioned, to have never wondered or searched, but always to have known what was essential for her, what her life was about, or, in other words, who she really is. Which is, of course, the whole point of The Lynn Show, that there is a person that you really are. And
Some fortunate few know that from the get-go. They know it from the beginning. They know it. Many do not. Many, as I said in the run-up, are cheated from being able to connect to parts of themselves. So the Lynn Show is not about, it's not only about saying that, but about saying that if you were cheated from some aspect of yourself, some important way in which you feel about yourself and the world, it may not be too late to rediscover that, to recapture that, to find that, to have access to that. And if you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynnshow.com. That's thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynnshow.com. There's an email tab. You can click on that and ask me any question that you have. You can listen to me reading the first chapter of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can get me to come and speak to your group or organization. You can listen to any of the shows that I have ever done. So as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated. Oh, fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, dang, no, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no. Go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't